Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
Hello again and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic the Gathering community. My name is Sean, I'm your host, I'm joined by my co-host Greg. How's it going, Greg?
What's going on tonight? I think it's going well.
Yes, sir. Back again before a month has passed. We're doing it, man. We're doing it.
That hasn't been a full month. It's been 2 weeks.
Exactly. I mean, we're doing better than we did last time, right? Right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, you know who appreciates that? It's Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com, where any order you make there, any product, be it singles or sealed product, any order over $10, use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps and save yourself 10% off your purchase, which will help contribute to future show giveaways. And before we move on, Greg, I know I'm springing this on you, but I'm kind of getting that itch again. Like, we need to do a giveaway pretty soon here. So hold on to your seats, people.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's been a minute. I think, episode 50 was the last time we did a giveaway? And that was a good one. We had a lot of guys really got to dig into that mono white commander deck for some juicy cards. So keep your ears open for that. We'll have that coming soon to you. But why don't we start off by talking about what we've done in Magic this last week. I'll go ahead and kick things off here because I'm very proud to say I played some Magic the Gathering. What?
I know, right? I can't believe it.
I don't really talk about it, but I play too. It was very fun. I had a couple Brawl decks that I had built, and my wife and I, we sat down and we played best 2 out of 3. She was playing Whatley, Radiant Champion, and I was playing Karn, Scion of Urza, which, full disclosure, everybody, they're not updated. They still were from old standard, but it was still super fun. I haven't gotten a chance to edit these decks yet, but the Whatley deck definitely was a swarm-based deck that, you bring her in, you pump one of your dudes. Dude, Sky Marcher Aspirant, that one that gets flying when you have the City's Blessing, that is a beautiful target for Whatley, especially when your opponent doesn't have any flying creatures. I got ran over by that guy in our second game, but Karn ended up being victorious, best 2 out of 3. When that machine gets going, it's too hard to take down. It was super fun. I love Brawl. I think it's absolutely fantastic. Oh, so when I told her that there were cards in the command zone, she rolled her eyes. She was like, I am not playing Commander. She wasn't really a fan of the big game format, but I told her, I'm like, look, it's 60 cards. Technically, it's standard in quotations, but it was really, really fun because it gives you a chance to play with the same cards in multiple games.
Yeah.
Whereas, Commander, sometimes it's a different game each time, which is good. Can be good.
Well, I mean, that's why we enjoy it.
Exactly. So, definitely loved it. Love Brawl. And can't wait to start brewing some new standard Brawl decks. All right, so Greg, was there anything you wanted to mention about Magic this week, or should we move on into?
I mean, I played some Magic, some EDH. I played against some control decks, which they just comboed off and won. So it wasn't really much to talk about, sadly.
Yeah.
Divine Visitation and Hazazin seems busted, though.
Now, what does those do? I know what Hazazin does, but what does Divine Visitation do?
Well, Divine Visitation says whenever you get a token, you replace whatever that token is with a 4/4 flying Vigilant Angel.
And why don't you refresh us as to what Hazazin does and how it
would come? So, what Hazazin says, when he enters the battlefield at the beginning of your next turn, you get a number of Sand Warrior tokens that are green, red, and white equal to the number of lands you control. And if Hazazin ever leaves play, you exile all Sand Warriors.
That sounds like a pretty juicy combo
type
there.
Sand and warrior. So if you have, for instance, changelings on the board, they also get exiled.
Gotcha.
But gotcha. Turning them all into angels means you stop caring about that.
Right. So if Azazen leaves play, you get to keep said angels.
Yeah, because they were different.
That's pretty sweet. I like it. I like it.
Yeah. So it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of cool stuff. I haven't been able to play it with it much like some of my friends have, but I'm excited for it nonetheless.
Nice. All right. Well, so we are going to go over some of the story that Wizards has produced on Daily MTG, where they go through some story between other characters from Ravnica who might not necessarily make the headlining spotlight that the Gatewatch gets constantly. So this week, we get to hear a little bit about one of our Dimir buddies. Before we go too deep, Greg, why don't we just jump on in to Lore Corner?
I think we can do that.
Yes. All right. So, Greg, do you want to kick us off here?
Well, we start off with, I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head right now. And he's sitting here in a protocol here
Merit.
In Merit.
Merit is the guy's name. Yeah.
Thank you so much. And he's here in this port. He's working, and he's not just working for his boss. He's not organizing the crates just completely. He's also got a Dimir spy bug that is investigating the crates. So every so often, he's cracking a crate open, and a spy bug's going in. He's never really been strong with magic. So after some of this, he breaks into a crate and sees that it's got some fine whiskey in it, known as Buttress South Whiskey, which is done in a 1,000-year-old Poach Celestium Forest cask. Yeah.
Very expensive.
So he's like, ooh, I'm going to pocket this. This is worth a lot of money. Well, he didn't do too well. And his boss shows up shortly after and is like, hey, I need you to clear the fog out of here so I can show this new vendor what we're working with here, because there's this fog all over this port. And he's like, sure, I guess I can try since everybody else isn't here.
Right.
So he musters up the spell to clear it off, and, well, he doesn't.
Yeah, he does a little
about
bit.
About half of it.
Right.
And so with that being said, the boss is like, I'm only giving you half day's pay then. That's it. And while he does get the fog out, we do see a Simic schooner for a moment, and then it vanishes.
Right, with a couple of merfolk there. And he says the fact that this area is heavily fogged makes for a good selling point for certain ships to be doing business. So a little bit of covert operations there. So
it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So as he goes there and he kind of fumbles, he goes home to his two kids and wife.
Mm-hmm.
With
two wives.
Barely enough money for food.
Yep.
And yep.
His wife is complaining, saying, you know, our baby is not being nourished. You know, we don't have money for food. We don't have money for this bottle that just broke. You know, it's very expensive, the stuff that was in it. And, you know, she's like, I can't, we can't live like this. Like, please.
I need more than one candle.
Exactly. And you know, he's saying, you know, hey, hoping to divert, you know, the focus away. He's like, oh, I brought home a dozen apples yesterday. He reminded her, and it's just not, it's not cutting it for his family. You can tell that he is an underpaid, you know, overworked guy whose family is, you know, relying on him to bring home the bacon, and it's just not getting done. This guy is in a downward spiral, and he needs to find some way to get out. And his wife even says, "We need the money. I don't care how you get it."
Yeah.
And so he's like, "Okay, all right, well, I am, you know, working for House Dimir. Why not do a little bit of sneaking around?" So he decides that he is actually going to infiltrate his boss's house.
Whoa. He doesn't decide to just do that straight off. He says he goes down to the grocery store to steal from there, but they have way too much security, so there's no way that he's going to sneak it, because he's just not good enough to hide it. So at this point, as he leaves the grocery store empty-handed, he finds his boss, Grimly Wathis, stepping out of his house, and he's like, "Oh yeah, of course he would live here." So he goes up to the house, and the lock there is just way too strong for him to be able to pick. So he's like, "Well, you know what? I've found out there's always another entrance." So he slips through the back window and into the kitchen, and he finds this great loaf of bread. He pockets it, of course, and he looks and sees this potion, blue shimmery liquid, and it says, "Potion of Focus."
Yep.
So he's like, "Oh, I want to have some of that." One drop, two drop, three drops. Oh, he gets scared. The wife of Grimly Wathis walks into the room, half asleep in her negligee.
Minotaur, mind you. These are very, very hulking individuals.
She walks across the building, the room, to get a bowl of chud to eat, some grass.
Delicious.
And he's standing essentially right next to her, and she doesn't see him. And as this happens, everything starts opening up in his mind, and unseen possibilities open as the potion takes hold of him.
Exactly.
And it's now spilled over his front, and he just wipes her mind.
Yep.
She never knew he was there.
Exactly. Yep. So
he's able to get free. He takes the loaf of bread. He gets home. He drops it off. Or no. He's like, "I have to use this focus. I'm going to go down to the dock."
Right.
You want to take it from here?
Sure. So he goes back down to the dock, and he wants to sort of keep his power under wraps, this newly discovered power with this elixir that he drank. So long story short, he's like, "Okay, you know what? I'm going to clear this stupid fog." And so the power wells within him, and he just throws out what he can and clears the fog completely. However, in doing so, he kind of creates a bit of a problem. There's a crate that begins falling, and this investor gets shoved out of the way before this crate comes down to smash him, and it's this big old hubbub, and, you know, the boss looks down, Grimly Wathis looks over at this guy, and he's like, "Oh no, what did you do? Merritt, you're totally screwing up." And so, you know, Merritt, I believe, just decides to flee the scene.
Yeah, he gets a bunch of guilt over this and how everything kind of just goes haywire. So he runs home. In his haste, he breaks the magical lock on his own door and gets the food to the kid. And at this point, he's like, "We need to go now. I screwed up."
Right.
And she's like, "No, everything's going to be fine. We don't have to." At this moment, their younger child sneezes, and all of
the baby
sneezes, and all the candles flare up to be a monstrous flame, and then they go out. At this moment, Grimly Wathis knocks on the door.
The mom the mother is telling Merritt, oh my gosh, our baby, he is so strong. He's so, you know, his cheeks are plump and his smile is glistening. Like, this is crazy. He's all of a sudden doing better than he's ever done before. And then he looks down and he sees this bread with this, you know, bluish elixir spilt yeah. on the bread. So this baby has obviously ingested some of this bread, but more importantly, he's ingested this elixir of focus and has grown incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
So, okay. So yeah, Grimbley comes up. Yeah, continue.
All right. So Grimbley comes up and says, you owe me. You broke those crates. I'm going to take this out on you. So he breaks in because the door doesn't hold him. Everybody's kind of scrambled. All you see is the wife and the father, Merritt. And he's like, where's that son of yours? I'm going to take him. He's going to be your payment.
I saw what he did with the candles, right. You know, before I came in here. So.
And so at this point, he's like, I'm going to sell off this kid and use him to my own means. So he grabs the kid and starts running out. Everybody scrambles to stop him. And then they notice the kid just vanishes.
Yep.
And Grimbley's like, what the heck? And the kid shows up in another spot there in the room. But he has this purple star fruit. Nobody knows where it came from. And then there's this shadow in the corner of the room. And it steps up and talks to Grimbley, saying, we will be paying for what has been damaged. And Merritt here will be back to work tomorrow without having to pay anything excess. You're going to be taken care of. And a silver spell kind of goes to Grimbley, and Grimbley says, okay. And he leaves.
Yep. And
Merritt
so
looks over and is like, what? So the guy introduces himself. It is Lazav. And he is going to mentor the child for taking care of everything.
Well, he says,
he
says, we're very interested in your child. And he goes, no, I don't want to give you my child. And he goes, oh, no, 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 no. You don't have to give me your child. You know, we're just going to mentor him. So you can raise him however you see fit. But he is ultimately mentally going to be under our tutelage.
Right.
And Merritt's like, oh, I get to keep my baby? And he goes, yeah, you know, but he will be watched and he will be trained. You just have to, you know, let us do all that. And he's like, okay. So he gets to go back to work. Their family gets to go about their business. Mm-hmm. And then how does this end, Craig?
So then at this moment, after all this is kind of agreed upon, everybody kind of changes. The mom's now at the counter cutting up the fruit. The father's talking to the mother. The firstborn is there playing in the living room, and the aunt has the baby, and they're all talking about, oh, this is going to be great having Auntie here to help take care of the baby. It's going to make life a lot easier for us.
Auntie, indeed. Wow. So Lazav is Auntie.
We don't know if it's Lazav or somebody else.
Sure. Right. But just the whole idea of House Dimir and the subterfuge, you know, and infiltrate. Oh, it's so great. I love Dimir.
Yes. Yes.
So
one other thing to bring up here, if you didn't notice, do you watch Game of Thrones?
I do.
So what's there's a place for the Assassin's Guild that has a bunch of faces, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's Lazav the Multifarious's card art?
Oh, he definitely looks like he belongs.
Lot of people are saying, what if Lazav is sculpted on that character?
Yeah. Yeah.
This could be the Arya Stark.
This could be Arya Stark, indeed.
Anyhow, man. That is just pure speculation. I think they really kind of hit the nail on the head with this. It's a great, a look into the life. I'm really excited to read the rest because I'm planning to do something special, which I'll talk about in news.
Okay, good little teaser there. Mm-hmm. Very nice. Mm-hmm. So, and this is definitely a great sort of lead in to Guilds of Ravnica, because I know we are waiting with bated breath to see what happens when the Gatewatch returns and Vraska gets her memories back and Nicol Bolas is confronted with a situation he might not have a handle on. But Greg, you were telling me something about the story and where we can find it coming up here.
Well, we know that they're going to be releasing 5 stories for Guild of Ravnica, and that's going to be for each of the guilds. It'll be much like what we've got now. Mm-hmm. We also found out that we're going to be getting 2 books starting in April. And this is going to be about Ravnica, the Gatewatch, and Bolas.
Okay.
So it's hard to say what we're really going to get, but it does look like we're going to get the end of the Gatewatch in a book form and not online. Which sucks, but it's understandable.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and we will do our best to keep you posted with the story as it unfolds, even if it means we have to go out and buy a book. Yeah.
And reading it chapter by chapter.
Yeah, because I tell you, I was so hooked at the end of that Ixalan story, and I bet Wizards knows that, you know? So now that everybody's all into the story, hey, let's make a book and not just give it away for free online, you know? So.
Well, I still think they're going to continue the story online. It's just a matter of the fact that they have too much that they want to put into it, so they can't do it in a periodical like these.
Okay. And in that light, in that regard, I could definitely appreciate that. And you better believe I want to know what's going to happen. So,
They're going to be doing the books in a hardback.
Ooh, yeah. And I wonder if they're going to have promos
with the book. That's a rumor. That is a rumor.
So, all right. Well, that was a sweet little story. We'll see what guild they choose to present us with next week. All right. Well, let's do what we do and bring you all into our next section known as Foretold. All right, so here we're going to be discussing some news and announcements, as well as some other interesting things. But, Greg, I want you to kick us off here with this crossover within Wizards of the Coast.
I was talking about this in Lore Corner. The kind of looking at each of the guilds and how a day in the life in the guild is, it feels like they're setting dungeon masters up for running Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica. So coming next month, we're going to be getting a D&D 5th edition book that is a crossover for Magic the Gathering.
Okay.
Which we know we've been getting Plane Shift for the past year and a half, which is a crossovers, but it's supplemental. I mean, 20 or so pages, some creature mock-ups and whatnot, but this is a full book, and more than just a full book, we're also getting a miniature set, dice set, we're going to get a map pack for the 10th district.
Whoa.
And to top all of this off, coming to a store near you, if I remember correctly, on the 9th of November, the week after this all releases, is going to be Guilds of Ravnica Weekend, something. There's a name for it, and I don't remember what it really is. Anyhow, what it's going to end up being is you're going to be able to do a 4-pack Guilds of Ravnica draft along with a dungeon playthrough for Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica, which, if I'm not mistaken, is being labeled Cranko's Bargain.
Ooh, that's a familiar face. That sounds like fun. Goblins are always a hootin' good time.
So we're going to have Cranko on Ravnica. So it's kind of interesting. So we'll wait and see, of course.
Right. And
bated breath.
One of my previous coworkers, he's since moved on to do other things, but he is definitely a very vivacious Dungeons & Dragons player. And when they came out with the Innistrad parallel, he was very excited. He grabbed that bull by the horns and ran with it. So it's so good to see this cross-pollination going on between Magic and Dungeons & Dragons.
There is even more to this. So along with this special weekend and draft event and D&D event, there is a special release that we're going to be getting from Wizards. Mm-hmm. And it is the Guild Kits. Now, if you haven't heard about this or seen this, these are 60-card decks. They are modern playable, technically. And they're going to MSRP at around $20. It's going to be for each of the five guilds representing the Guild of Ravnica. So you have Boros Demir. Golgari and Celestia.
There you go.
And they're going to be having alternate art legendary creatures, which most of them have been guild masters. So we've got Nimizzet the Fire Mind, Tristani Discordant, so that's the one that gains life and populates. Azoni the Thousand Eyes, Aurelia the War Leader, the first one, not the new one, and why am I blanking on? Oh, no, I'm blanking on it. Nimizzet the Firemind. There we go. I always forget the Izzet for some reason. But they're going to be cards from across Ravnica sets only. So we're getting reprints of things like Glimpse the Unthinkable, Abrupt Decay, Deathrite Shaman, Privileged Position. So many good cards are getting printed. Then on top of all these extra cards, we're going to be getting a guild pin and a guild sticker. All that for $20 seems like a great deal.
Yeah, and I love how they're incorporating Deathrite Shaman in here, because it's banned in Modern, it's banned in Legacy, but it's such a good card. It's so much fun to play with, and while not necessarily, you know, guarantee of in a one-of deck, it's still a really, really, really good card. So, you know, good on Wizards for just doing that. And and yeah, I'm just, you know, looking here, seeing some familiar faces. You get an Argus Koss reprint.
What?
Might have talked about him that in our previous episode. Good. With a sweet new legendary border. You got Razia, Boros Archangel. That's pretty dope right there. And then, like you said, Aurelia, the War Leader. Just these seem like really, really good and fun decks to play.
Yeah.
Wasn't Izoni Thousand-Eyed just recently printed in a Commander product?
And what about that Atrada the Silencer?
Oh, man. Was that in Demir?
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. That was a great card.
And there'll be alternate arts for those, too.
Now, are all legendaries getting alternate art or just a few?
No, only the five.
Only the five. Okay. Yeah.
So Atrada, Nimizzet, Tristani Discordant, Izoni, and Aurelia the War Leader.
Oh, that consuming aberration, though.
Demir.
That card is so good. That card won me many games in our pre-release back in Gate Crash. Yep. But these are super sweet. And like you said, MSRP for $20. If you or anyone you know wants to try Magic out, this would be an excellent opportunity for you to get them involved, because there's some sweet, powerful cards, some great, great synergy, and they seem like they would play pretty well against each other. You know, no overpoweredness yet that we know of. So, Guild Kits coming November 2nd, 2018. Definitely take a look for those. All right. And what else? Oh, if we just want to move on to here, I actually got the opportunity. I went to Seattle a couple weeks ago for some training for work.
Oh, you did?
I did. But the highlight of my trip was I actually brought two of my coworkers with me. They're good sports. I went to Wizards of the Coast headquarters and, you know, walked in the front door. And it was, honestly, I'm a 36-year-old guy, but I've been playing this game since I was 13. You know, I was like 13 all over again. It was crazy. Like, yeah. I just walking in the door, you know, I spoke with this woman. Her name was Angela. Very, very nice. Awesome, awesome woman. And, you know, very, you know, she greeted me great and, you know, offered a swag bag. It was really cool. And she's like, oh, is there anybody here that you'd like to meet? And I was like, oh, my gosh. I didn't even think about that. Like, what the heck? And then I turn around and I see Tom Ross walking in. And I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's Tom Ross. Hold on. And I run over to him. And I'm like, Tom, hi. Hi, I'm Sean. I'm a big fan. I've seen you play, you know, on Star City, on stream a lot. You mind if I take a picture with you real quick? And he was super cool. He's like, sure, you know, took a picture with me. And my coworkers were just laughing. They were like, oh my gosh, look at you. You're a nut, you know? And I'm like, yeah. And so I went back over and Angela's like, well, do you want to go up to the floor, you know, to see the floor where all this stuff happens? I'm like, yeah. So jumped in the elevator, went up, and their elevator doors have pictures of planeswalkers on them. I mean, why not? It's Wizards of the Coast. It was so cool. So we walked through the door and I got to see Mitzi, who is their resident dragon. Legit.
Shivan dragon.
Yes, huge Shivan dragon right there as you walk in. So took a picture with him, and then she's like, so I'll ask, you know, one more time, is everybody you want to meet? And I'm like, well, Mark's probably busy right now. So, and she cuts me off. She goes, hang on a second, let me check. And she gets on her phone, and she literally just texts Mark Rosewater and is like, da-da-da-da. Oh, well, he's in a play test right now, so I'm obviously jealous. And then she goes, well, he's actually done right now. Do you want to meet him? And I'm just like, yes, please. So she calls him down, and I'm literally like shaking right there. And I'm, again, 13-year-old me is coming out. But he walks in and, you know, shakes my hand. I greet him. And he asks me, you know, is there anything you've ever wanted to know about Magic? And I apologize, I was not prepared at all. So, you know, I just asked him, what's your favorite set? And I've heard him on his podcast react to this before, and he's like, oh, it's like, which one of my children do I love the best? But he then started referencing Unstable, which I totally get. I think it's fantastic to sort of take Magic in a different direction and keep things fresh. But then I was starting to talk to him about things that I knew he was passionate about. So I started talking to him about energy and how he felt about energy. And he's like, well, it was good. It might have been a little bit too powerful. And, you know, we talked about the potential of if it were to empty at the end of steps and stuff like that. But anyway, so we chatted about, you know, this, that, and the other. And after about, you know, 8 or 9 minutes, he's like, all right, well, I got to go back to play testing. What was it, Milk? I think he was play testing Milk. And I'm like, I am super duper jealous. And then he left. And after he left, my friends are like, wait, don't you do a podcast? Did you mention? I'm like, oh my God, I didn't even mention to him that we do a podcast. So I'll have to make another trip out there and talk to him about all that. But anyway, it was super, super awesome just to show up and be able to meet him right then and there. It was an awesome experience. If you're ever in the Seattle area, go and check it out. You know, it's where the magic happens. It's where the game gets made. They're very open, very welcoming, and it's a great place to check out. So I had a ton of fun there, and looking forward to maybe going back again.
Did you see the beta sheets on the wall?
I did not, no. I was only in the entry area on the floor where they have magic. I saw, like, the list of what is it, their mission statement or something like that. They had a bunch of product up on the shelves. You had Mitzi. You had the break room where they had a nice little statue of a goblin on the table. But I didn't actually go through the doors anywhere to see anything.
Yeah, I think, like, right behind those first doors, the one thing that I've heard about is they have an uncut sheet of all of beta.
Wow.
They don't have any alpha because I don't think they had any. It sold out too well. But I think they have, like, all of beta or something to that extent. And I'm just like, if they were to ever cut that or sell it or auction it off, the millions of dollars that they could probably get.
Right.
or hundreds of thousands. I mean, they could bankroll an entire another set.
There you go.
With what's sitting around.
But why would you do that? That's obviously priceless when it comes to, you know, the creators of the game. But
I mean,
anyway,
is that anything like 1996 World Champion?
Yeah, could be.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, awesome experience, and I think that's gonna wrap it up for our As Foretold segment. And so now, Greg, we have our work cut out for us. We have a brand new standard after this rotation, and my God, the possibilities are literally endless. So,
well, there's about eight decks.
Okay, yeah, sure, but let's take a look at them in the Brewmaster's Lair. All right, so here in the Brewmaster's Lair, Greg, where do you want to go first?
I mean, we can talk about what won at the SCG Classic out in Columbus.
Ooh, and what deck would that be?
So the first place was red, white, angels.
Ooh.
So
tell
this deck
more.
Was using Adanto Vanguard, which is that 1/1 vampire soldier that when it attacks, it becomes a 3/1. Oh, yeah, and you can pay for life to make it indestructible. Seems good. Oh, Aurelia of Exemplar of Justice. Sure. Mentor, make my Adanto Vanguard bigger, then trigger the ability, and then give it another. Oh, my God. Everything.
So good.
Then Knight of Grace. Because first strike and hexproof from black is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Lyra Dawnbringer. What? Lifelink to other angels? Making Aurelia a 3/6 lifelink? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Then to add on a little bit of more, Resplendent Angel. That 3-drop 3/3 that if you gain 5 life, you get a 4/4 white angel with flying and vigilance. And then to round it out, you're going to run 3 of Shalai, Voice of Plenty, so that your stuff has hexproof. You're also going to run a 1 of Johnny, Adversary Tyrants, a couple Conclave Tribunals in place of an Oblivion Ring, Deafening Clarion to give your dudes either lifelink or wipe the board.
Deafening Clarion is a great card. I think that this card is going to be a pillar in standard moving forward.
Yeah. And then your last spell is going to be, our last spell is History of Benalia and Lightning Strike.
History of Benalia holding that $25 median price tag. That,
oh, yeah.
That card is just so good.
Have you seen what Teferi is at right now?
I have not. I can't wait to get to a deck that has him so I can actually see what his price is. Well, why don't you just tell us?
He's like 50s.
50.
Oh, yeah, he's at $50 right now.
Oh, well, he's just so good.
Yeah,
he is
really
unbelievable.
Is.
I mean, Aurelia, she's $15.
Yeah,
like a good Aurelia, you know. And you, the jury was out on her. Like everyone's like, oh, well, she's good. Oh, she might not be good, but turns out she's good. Turns out she's really good. So, you know, don't sleep on Aurelia. And plus, the I wonder if. Where? Oh, no, it's not running it. Okay. That red, white creature deals damage equal to its power to itself.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good card. I think we'll see some of that later on, but yeah, no. Red, white angels is definitely the talk of the town right now. Holy cow. Next deck down, we've got Grixis Control by Andrew Jessup.
Mm-hmm.
Sporting 4 Nicol Bolas the Ravengers, still at $25. That's pretty huge. Just a whole lot of death and card draw, and you've got the 3 Essence Scatters, a Fungal Infection. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Fungal Infection, of course, 1 black, target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn, create a 1/1 green Saproling creature token. It's an instant. I mean, just one to play a 1/1 green sapling creature would be good enough, but the fact that you get to give something -1/-1 in addition is very strong. Moment of Craving, some cheap -2/-2 action, giving you some life. You know, you're going to be racing a lot of mono red the first couple of weeks, so that seems like a really, really good card. Notion Rain. This is a very interesting and intriguing card here. For one blue black, you get a sorcery. Surveil 2, then draw 2 cards. Notion Rain deals 2 damage to you. So this falls into the same category as, like, you know, Read the Bones or cards like that. How do you feel about Notion Rain in terms of how it stacks up?
I think it's a fine card. The Surveil trigger is just better than Scry. I like Scry. Being able to put stuff on the bottom of your library, but being able to put stuff in your graveyard is just better.
I completely agree, especially with the new Snapcaster Mage card. Its name escapes me right now, but something plans.
Mission briefing.
There you go. So you could literally surveil your cards into your graveyard with intent to play them later with a card like Mission Briefing. I agree. The Surveil makes that card very strong. Moving right along, we've got Ritual of Soot. Destroy all creatures with converted mana cost 3 or less for 4 mana. It's pretty powerful. You got Search for Iskanta, Syncopate, Eldest Reborn as a singleton in the main. Thought Erasure. Target opponent reveals their hand. You choose a non-land card from it. That player discards that card, and you surveil 1 for just a blue and a black. That's pretty powerful. And then, of course, 4 Vraska's Contempt. So yeah. Grixis Control looking pretty good here. Where do we go next?
Well, your sideboard cute things, you've got the Thief of Sanity, which is busted. It's really strong. Yep. Golden Demise and that Argel's Bloodfast that's been making it into a lot of these Grixis Control decks.
Yeah, Argel's Bloodfast is that card that is quietly powering these control decks to victory, giving you that added card draw that you need while having the back end of being able to support your life total if need be. But ultimately, I think you're there for that, you know, pay 2 life, draw a card for 2 mana, especially when you're running like Moment of Craving to gain you 2 extra life so you can fuel that activation a few more times. And Vraska's Contempt doing that life gain for you as well.
Yep.
Oh, let's not forget the 3 Dream Eaters.
Oh, yeah.
Dream Eater is a great card. It's a Sphinx, but you might not guess that looking at it. It's got a little, like, tentacly hairy head. But for 4 blue-blue, you get a 4/3 flash flying Nightmare Sphinx. When it enters the battlefield, surveil 4, which is a poop ton of cards.
And then
when you do, you may return target non-land permanent an opponent controls to its owner's hand. So let's unpack this here for a second. For 6 mana, you get a flash 4/3 flying. That's almost good enough already. But then you get to surveil 4. Look at the top 4 cards of your deck. Choose which ones go on top and which ones go in your graveyard. We're not done. You also get to bounce a non-land permanent an opponent controls, clearing the way for your attack. Whew. That card does a lot for just 6 mana.
It
just
really does.
6 mana. Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. I know after this we have another Red White Angels deck, but where do you want to go next, Greg?
That mono red deck's really cute.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people playing that. If you ask me, the real star of this mono red deck, we can talk about what you got in the main deck. There's nothing too surprising there, but that risk factor is super strong.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't know what Risk Factor is, you better be reading about it because it's going to be hitting you soon. So it's 2 generic and a red instant, and target opponent may choose to have it deal 4 damage to them. If they don't, you get to draw 3 cards. Now, I've seen some versions of this where instead of the Experimental Frenzy in the main, they're running the Saga Flame of Keld, where they discard their hand, draw 2 cards, then all red sources deal double damage. So what they'll do is when that Flame of Keld hits the third slot, they'll jump start their risk factor. So it's take 8 damage or I draw 3 cards.
Right. Right. That's brutal. I mean, you want to harken back to the predecessor, Browbeat. And that card was merely a sorcery that you could only play once. This is just potential for insane card draw or insane damage.
Yeah.
You're really up against the wall when you're choosing having to have your opponent draw 6 cards or you're going to take 8 damage. Like, that's just absolutely brutal. Right. So let's dive into another card here that I'm very excited about. Runaway Steamkin, which is 1 and a red for 1/1 elemental. Whenever you cast a red spell, that's creature, instant, sort anything red. If it has fewer than 3 1/1 counters on it, put a 1/1 counter on Runaway Steamkin. Remove 3 1/1 counters, add red. So, just looking at what we have here, Fanatical Firebrand, Gitu Lava Runner are both 1-drops. You also have Shock. You have Wizard's Lightning, which is potentially just a red. All these really, really, really cheap spells that are going to be powering your Runaway Steamkin not only to get bigger, but to play even more spells. So let's say, for example here, let's just go into Magical Christmas Land, that you throw your Runaway Steamkin down on turn 2. On turn 3, you play 1 Fanatical Firebrand, 1 Gitu Lava Runner, and you shock something, okay, with all 3 of your mana. You attack with your Runaway Steamkin, which is now a 4/4, and then no matter what they do, even if they have a combat trick, at instant speed, you can remove 3/1/1 counters on Runaway Steamkin and cast your risk factor. That's just... That's crazy. The combo potential. I mean, the red decks are always very fast, very aggressive.
Yes.
But to be able to use your resources at that speed, and just, you know, and also, Diamond Mare. What? That is such a mirror breaker in this match because you're going to be casting all the red spells.
Correct.
And Diamond Mare is a 2 generic 1/3. Artifact creature horse that says, as it enters the battlefield, choose a color. Red, duh. Whenever you cast a spell of this chosen color, gain 1 life. I mean, I don't know if I need to say more. You're gonna be gaining all the life, casting all the spells, and winning all the mirrors with Diamond Mare.
Yep.
So, also, Greg, what are your thoughts on Lava Coil?
I think it's cute because it eats Rekindling Phoenix. You notice something that's not in any of these decks?
What's that?
Rekindling Phoenix.
Yeah. Yeah, right. That's just... Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's such a good card that is no good when it's in the face of exile. All right. Anything else you want to do with this mono red aggro deck?
I mean... I just want you to look at the Mono Red Aggro deck by Eric Hawkins there in 16th place, just so you can see the Flame of Keld.
Ooh, yes, please.
Yeah.
So the Flame of Keld.
That's one my friend has been playing with.
Okay, so this goes way back to Dominaria, but just for those of you who might not know, Greg, do you want to tell us what the Flame of Keld does?
Flame of Keld is, what, a 2-drop, if I remember correctly?
Yeah, 1 and a red.
And its first saga says you discard your hand. Kind of hurts. The second chapter says draw 2 cards.
Ooh, that's good.
Then the third chapter says whenever a red source you control would deal damage, it deals double damage.
That's pretty brutal.
It says turn four. Your dudes do double damage. So that Runaway Steamkin that you just dropped into a risk factor could potentially kill a player.
Yeah.
By themselves.
Yeah. And I mean, on turn 4, let's just say, God, this is so crazy. You play your Flame of Keld on turn 2. So yeah, turn 4 it goes off, and then you go Viashino Pyromancer. something gets to take four, a planeswalker or a player.
Actually, what I've seen happen a couple times with that play is that there's like a fanatical firebrand out, a chain whirler, and then they'll go double of that Viashino Pyromancer.
That's what I was about to say.
Somebody for 8 damage and then swing in for the 1/1 and the 3/3 to do an additional 8.
That's stupid.
16
not to
damage.
Mention the fact that if you play your Goblin Chain Whirler on that turn, it'll do 2 damage to everything your opponents have.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh.
It's all so good. It's really strong. I think this is the best way to play it, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
A couple other decks of note. You've got the black-green mid-range deck running the new Plague Crafter and Chupacabras. Some of these people are using some interesting cards as spells. Find and Finality. And there's also one... This guy isn't running it. There's a gruesome something menagerie where it brings back a 1-drop, a 2-drop, a 3-drop. So a lot of these black-green mid-range decks or aggro decks are running Stitcher Supplier, which will die, Merfolk Branchwalker, which will die, or Glow Spore Shaman even, and Jadelight Rangers. So there's so much it can do. So for 5 mana, it can get all those back and allows them to get really far. And some of them are running Azoni in the top, and it's so good. And you can run Doom Whisper in it as well.
Okay.
Which is pretty strong. Pretty strong.
Now, I'm looking at the 5th place deck here, which is actually a breath of fresh air in the face of all these other things that we've been seeing, because it's simple.
Are you talking about Mono Blue Aggro?
It's streamlined, and the median price on the entire deck is just $65, and yet it's placing 5th at a Star City event here. This is just pure blue tempo value, and I mean, there's even some counter magic in here. So you're looking at your Exclusion Mage, which is a 3-drop 2/2. When it enters the battlefield, return target creature and opponent controls to its owner's hand, so you get to bounce something. It is a wizard. Merfolk Trickster, which will tap something down and make your opponent's creatures lose all their abilities till the end of turn. It is a wizard. Then you've also got Siren Storm Tamer, which is a 1-drop 1/1 flyer. Sacrifice it, counter target spell or ability that targets a creature you or a creature you control. It is also a wizard. And they're also running for Wizard's Retort, which is a pure counter spell as long as you control a wizard. That right there is just, it's so fun to think about the possibilities for Mono Blue. Also, Tempest Djinn is not to be taken lightly. Tempest Djinn is a blue Djinn, which is a 0/4 flyer that gets +1/+0 for each basic island you control.
Yep.
So, this deck is running 21 islands. You're not going to have a non-island land. All your lands give this thing power. So, early game, late game, this card is a force to be reckoned with. I love it. Absolutely love it.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, Diamond Mare in the sideboard. Watch out. Card's good. Card's really good.
It is pretty good.
Dude, I forgot that Sleep is in Standard.
Yeah.
That card's so good. The card is so good. It takes care of your Carnage Tyrants. It takes care of anything with Hexproof. It just clears the way for everything to come in and beat face. Yeah.
So, sure does.
Yeah. A Curious Obsession. If that thing goes for even just 2 or 3 turns, that's like backbreaking.
Yeah.
So...
It's just really cute. It does a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome deck. All right. Let's move on. Anything else you wanna touch on here?
Not really. I mean, you've got your control deck, the Jeskai control. It's all pretty much par for the course. There's nothing too outlandish here. I was looking at the green-white tokens deck. They're running Divine Visitation in the side, but not the main.
Nice.
And Lyra Dawnbringer is tech.
Yeah, with that. So, like, oh, Divine Visitation Lyra. Oh, man. That's brutal.
But otherwise, no, not really.
Okay, well then I'll round us out with one more, just because this deck looks like it is going to actually be very, very powerful moving forward. I know we said that mono blue deck was $65 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
This deck runs a cool $500. It is Jeskai Control. Get used to it. People are going to want to play it. And this deck runs three of said Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, fetching that $50 price tag. Yep. So that's $150 out of the deck right there. But it's also running, in the main, one Ral is at Viceroy. And I've heard a lot of poo-pooing of Ral, but it seems like in a good Jeskai, or even is it Control Shell, maybe even Grixis, he seems like he could be a very, very good card, especially if you find a way to get him up to that ultimate. So,
that's true.
But moving on down here, we've got Chemister's Insight.
What about that Niv-Mizzet?
Oh, dude, Niv-Mizzet is just a boss. Like, it's so good with what is that jumpstart draw card? I'm looking for it right now.
Radical Idea.
This deck isn't actually playing Radical Idea, but
no.
We're looking here. This deck actually is just four Planeswalkers, 28 spells, and 28 land. But it's running that Deafening Clarion, two of. It's running a Cleansing Nova, which is absolutely such a good card. I mean, I know we're not in Kaladesh anymore, so the artifacts are kind of but still, the fact that you can choose is huge. Ionize, counter target spell. It deals 2 damage to that spell's controller. That's a great card.
That is a great counter spell.
That is a great counter spell indeed. And there it is, Justice Strike. Red and a white for an instant. Target creature deals damage to itself equal to its power. Very, very, very useful card. And then you're going to see a lot of returners from old Jeskai builds. But still, it's so good. So good. The Shalai in the sideboard. Don't know where you're getting your green from. Probably
they don't care
somewhere.
About the green, actually.
Yeah, it's just giving everything X-proof.
It's more about having the
Hexproof.
The Hexproof, correct.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. Wow. All right, man. Well, hey. Standard looks fun, looks very exciting, and can't wait to see what starts bubbling up to the top here in some of these competitive tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
I think that brings us to the end of our brew segment. One thing I would also like to start doing, we've been doing it kind of for the last, I think, episode or two as we start to move out to sign off, is just recognize maybe one or two other content creators or podcasts or anything like that out there. I was reminded on one of our YouTube comments, if you are into competitive Magic and learning more about pros and what makes them tick and their history, well, I've got the answer. There's a podcast called MTG Pro Tutor, hosted by Sean Penrod, where he dives in with each of these guests, and they are pro Magic players, and just asks them about this, you know, the meta, how they got to be in Magic, and stuff like that. So go ahead and check out MTG Pro Tutor. It is a great podcast. I've listened to a bunch of his episodes off MTG Cast, and Sean's a great guy and does a great job with his podcast. So check out MTG Pro Tutor. That's going to be my plug for this episode. Also, might as well let y'all know one more time that this show is brought to you by Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com, where any order you make over $10, use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps, save yourself 10% off your purchase, which will help contribute to future show giveaways. We're going to have some information on that in the next episode, because we are going to give something away. I'm frothing at the mouth to give something away, dude. It's like tingling.
Yes.
Gotta do it, man. Gotta do it.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, Greg, where can our listeners find you?
You guys can find me on Twitter under noobslasher2003. It says co-host of the Win Condition podcast on there.
And you can find me at MTG_Sean. The show is at The Win Condition. Check us out on Instagram, YouTube, Twitch, all the places you can find your podcasts from. Mm-hmm. And we love the feedback. We love the support. And you can email us at thewincondition@gmail.com.
You can.
All right. Well, Greg, all that being said, thanks again.
Been a pleasure.
And we will talk to you soon.